Welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, using artificial intelligence to predict sudden cardiac arrest. Doctors are making progress, and we'll tell you about it. It's Weird Wednesday, which means free gas in Omaha? That's a felony. A bizarre new sport in Colorado blends rodeo with skiing. Kevin Bacon escapes his pig pen in Wisconsin, and one Lego piece sells for nearly $20,000. Plus, on this day in history, how earmuffs kept one town running for decades. That's coming up on Cool Stuff. Well, the surge in AI services over the last year has generated a wide range of reaction and response from experts and everyday citizens alike. Some tout the benefits of artificial intelligence while promoting the wide range of tasks it can assist with, particularly as it advances in intelligence. Others maintain a healthy skepticism, with fears as wide-ranging as students who may never have to actually execute some of the tasks or homework assigned to them. After all, AI can take care of that. To the more extreme visions of the technology taking over the world in some form or fashion. And even if it's not the scene that played out in 1992's Terminator 2, perhaps it's more likely to maliciously crash the internet or provide loads of false information to people. Regardless of your stance, though, it's clear AI is beneficial for some high-level tasks already. Case in point, two new studies conducted by Cedars-Sinai investigators, that's the world-class health facility in Los Angeles, support using artificial intelligence to help predict sudden cardiac arrest, a health emergency that in 90% of cases leads to death within minutes. Dr. Sumeet Chugh is the director of the Division of Artificial Intelligence in Medicine at Cedars-Sinai, and yes, they have such a department these days. He was also senior author of both aforementioned studies. He stated via press release, quote, "Sudden cardiac arrest is a most lethal condition, and prevention will make the biggest impact, but we need to find novel clinical tools to make that possible. Using AI algorithms to improve prediction of sudden cardiac arrest could help doctors identify which patients might be at higher risk of experiencing this devastating condition," end quote. Now, per the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 350,000 people have an out-of-hospital sudden cardiac arrest in the United States alone each year. That seems crazy high. During sudden cardiac arrest, a change in the heart's electrical activity causes it to suddenly stop beating. Now, having a heart condition can make a person more likely to experience sudden cardiac arrest, but it can also occur in people with no known heart condition. In a study published in Communications Medicine, Dr. David Ouyang, assistant professor of cardiology and medicine at Cedars-Sinai, along with Chugh and fellow investigators, trained a deep learning algorithm to study patterns in electrocardiograms, also known as ECGs, which are recordings of the heart's electrical activity. Their model studied electrical cardiograms from people who experienced sudden cardiac arrest and people who did not. The study included 1,827 pre-cardiac arrest electrocardiograms from people who later experienced sudden cardiac arrest. It also included 1,342 electrocardiograms from people who did not experience sudden cardiac arrest. The investigators found the Cedars-Sinai developed AI model more accurately predicted who would experience out-of-hospital sudden cardiac arrest than the more conventional method called the ECG risk score currently being used today. Essentially, it's a more manual, traditional way for doctors to calculate a person's risk for the condition that incorporates information from electrocardiogram readings. Now, per Chugh, quote, "The entire digital electrocardiogram signal performs significantly better than a few of its components. We plan to continue to study this AI method to learn how it could be used in a clinical setting," end quote. And in a separate study, recall there were two of these, Chugh and fellow investigator Dr. Peter Slomka trained an AI model to differentiate between two underlying causes of sudden cardiac arrest, pulseless electrical activity and ventricular fibrillation. Easy for me to say. Pulseless electrical activity means that the heart's electrical signals are too weak to produce a heartbeat. It can't be treated with a defibrillator and often leads to death. Ventricular fibrillation is a type of irregular heartbeat that can cause the heart to stop beating, but an electric shock from a defibrillator can trigger the beating again. Now, after the AI model reviewed patterns in electrocardiogram readings as well as patient characteristics, investigators were able to determine risk factors for both types of sudden cardiac arrest. People who experienced the pulseless electrical activity, for example, were more likely to have been older, been overweight, have had anemia, or experienced shortness of breath as a warning symptom. Those who had ventricular fibrillation were more likely to be younger, have had coronary artery disease, or experienced chest pain as a warning symptom. Per Dr. Lori Holmstrom, a visiting postdoctoral scientist at Cedars-Sinai, quote, "We have ways of preventing sudden cardiac arrest through technologies like a defibrillator, but the challenge is knowing who is most likely to benefit from this intervention. These findings could help cardiologists identify which patients are likely to have a pulseless electrical activity sudden cardiac arrest or ventricular fibrillation sudden cardiac arrest and help them prevent these events from occurring," end quote. So we inch closer to AI being used regularly in a clinical setting. To wrap things up, said Dr. Paul Noble, chair of the Department of Medicine at Cedars-Sinai, quote, "These studies exemplify the potential for AI to detect patterns in the body that the human eye and standard medical tests cannot. We are getting closer to being able to use AI to prevent dangerous events such as sudden cardiac arrest," end quote.
I think this is a great tool, but I do worry about AI if it gets to that point where it's hallucinating. You know, we've talked about that before, where it starts grabbing, I guess, incorrect information. I mean, obviously, they're testing this, and hopefully they continue that, but you never know when that wrong information can come in. So I hope there's still plans to watch and assist the AI and not rely on the AI completely.
Yeah, I don't want to make a fool of myself here because I do not understand the deep levels of AI and the coding side of it. So I may sound like I'm naive to someone who's more familiar with that, but I would assume that the AI being trained and used in a hospital is going to be localized, Reggie, as opposed to being some available tech on the internet that can be compromised by malicious code. I would assume you can self-contain that and keep it free and clear of those types of things, but maybe I'm totally wrong about that. Again, I'm not intelligent enough or knowledgeable enough about this particular subject to comment. So anybody out there who is intelligent enough to have something to say about this, please hit us up, coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
See, I just worry they're going to get to a point where the AI may not know the information that is needed. So it creates its own, I guess, thought of what it should be, which could then be wrong. First, as a human doctor, hopefully they're willing to admit they don't know the information and get assistance. So that's where I just hope we don't rely on the AI too much. And, you know, as for the fears of AI taking over the world, I don't know if like I'm worried about the T2 or Terminator situation as much as I am as the over-reliance on it.
No, I think that's an entirely fair point. Although in my head, I'm picturing the T-1000 in surgery right now, performing a procedure on someone.
I'll be back.
There's Arnold cleaning up somebody's knee.
I'm going the wrong movie here, but it's not a tumor.
Now you're just going out of your way to state Arnold quotes.
That's right. Get to the chopper.
Next story.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
It's that time of week again for
Weird
Wednesday.
What do you got, Reg?
A woman in Nebraska found a way to get free gas, but is now paying for it with a felony charge.
Oh.
The 45-year-old woman found out at the gas station that she frequents, if you double swipe that rewards card, the pump will give you free gas. The Pump and Pantry reported in October that they have been scammed and that her crime of getting free gas cost them $28,000. So how did this happen? The gas station received a software update in November of 2022, which created a glitch that made it if you swipe the card twice at the pump, it put it in demonstration mode. In that version, you can pump at no cost. Then they were able to trace that card that had been using this method back to the owner, and video surveillance showed the women pumping gas multiple times from November of 2022 until June 1st, when the glitch was fixed. Now, I get that gas is expensive, but 8 months of free gas, is that really $28,000 in damages? What is she filling up? A tank? A jet? What is she filling up?
Well, that's in my, if I'm guessing or speculating here, I assume that's probably what led to them ultimately feeling they needed to track her down. If you had just come in once a week, once every couple of weeks to fill up a single car, there's no way that's totaling $28,000 over that amount of time. So I'm going to say she went out of her way to take advantage of this and therefore the felony charge, Reggie. Like it was, what's the terminology? Premeditated. Going, oh, I know how to do this. Let me take advantage of it and keep bringing other people's cars over or bringing a boat over or bringing God knows what else. Maybe brought her lawnmower over for all I know. But that has to be what happened here, because otherwise, is the store going to notice a few hundred bucks that are missing? I would argue that it's going to be a lot less likely than 28 grand missing from the pumps.
And you know, the problem is it doesn't matter if it's 28,000 or $1,000. She could still get charged that felony. That's where I always keep saying, if I'm going to commit a crime, I'm going big. I'm going to make it worth the time that I'm going to spend in jail.
So you would have stole the $28,000.
Not enough.
You would have stopped at $1,000. You'd be like, nope, going all in here.
No, I would have found a way to get millions in free gas.
I think they would have figured that out even sooner.
I'm selling it to foreign countries. I don't care. I'm getting those jugs and I'm filling them up.
All right. No comment from Marcus. Please note, all complaints should be sent to Reggie Rizzo. He loves to solicit those things anyway.
So, Marcus, have you ever heard of skijoring?
Sounds like a foreign word. What's that now?
Well, it's a melting of two events, rodeo and skiing. It usually involves horses, but dogs, snowmobiles, and even cars have been used in this event.
Wow.
It's as simple as having a skier being towed by a rope with speeds up to 40 miles per hour and jumps as high as 8 feet while zooming around obstacles and trying to land suspended hoops with a baton, which is usually just a ski pole that is cut in half.
Wait, what is lancing a suspended hoop with a baton?
You basically try to get the hoop. You stick your little baton in the hoop and then grab it.
Okay.
Well, this crazy event takes place in Leadville, Colorado, in the Rocky Mountains. If you're curious, they're at an elevation of 10,158 feet. Maybe that's what leads to this. I don't know. 5 years ago, around 350 people took part in the competition. Now, more than 1,000 show up with a crowd of 10,000 spectators. Skijoring has been taking place since 1948, and they bill it as the granddaddy of them all. Nick Burry, once again, I feel like a great name for a skiing event, Burry. He is a 26-year-old from Colorado who also participates in the competitions and says, quote, "It's just the pure adrenaline that gets me to do it." And then getting those two different groups of people together with the riders and the skiers, usually they don't hang out, and getting them together, we mesh pretty well, end quote. As for the name, it comes from the Norwegian word skikjoring, which means ski driving, which was actually considered a practical way of getting around in Scandinavia and became popular in the Alps in the 1900s. And yes, the sport is very dangerous. One of the riders from this year's event fell off his horse and hurt his head. Burry separated his shoulder a few weeks prior to the race, but still managed to compete in this year's contest. Burry added, quote, "Wrong turn, taking a jump wrong, going down wrong, you could end your season. Then hospital bills rack up, but it's all just for the thrill of it," end quote. Savannah McCarthy, a 24-year-old banker from Colorado who has been doing this since she's 12, said the world goes silent when she is racing. Quote, "I don't hear a thing when I'm running. When it is happening, you really don't have to think about anything. But when you get done, you're like, holy cow, that was insane," end quote. And just so you know, in the past, she has broken her nose when her horse slipped and headbutted her. Another time, she lost control of the horse and crashed into a minivan. However, even with all this chaos, Lauren Zimanskova, the chair of the Skijoring USA, hopes it'll become a winter Olympic sport someday, now that it's becoming more and more popular. Not only do they do runs in Colorado, but it's popular in Wyoming, Montana, in the US, and then overseas, Poland and Switzerland also have events. There is no official governing body for skijoring and no uniform set of rules and no point system. Plus, every track is different and everyone has their own traditions. So I think some work needs to be done before it can be considered for the Olympics.
Yeah, I should say so. I think you need a universal set of rules and a system of scoring before the Olympic Committee is going to consider bringing you aboard.
I personally have no plans to ever take part in this sport. I don't even trust going skiing. I've never done it, and I know I'm going to fall, and I know I'm going to hurt myself. So I have no plans to go 40 miles per hour on skis.
Oh, you would be both. I've been skiing. I know that can be dangerous enough for someone like myself, not taking part in this. But I would be curious to have a look at one of the events sometime in person.
I guess if you like to see crashes and people get hurt, It's a good sport for you to watch. Well, when it comes to odd news, I think Wisconsin may be becoming the new Florida. In Kenosha County, Wisconsin, a 450-pound pig named Kevin Bacon was on the loose. A couple spotted the pig on their security camera, so naturally, what do? You feed it. Jake Mulgard says that's what his wife does. Quote, my wife started feeding him right away. That's what she does with every animal that comes into our backyard, end quote. She fed him apples, rice cakes, tomatoes, and carrots, but then it was time to find his owner. They contacted a farmer friend of theirs, and because this is Wisconsin, he naturally knew who the owner of the pig was and had the guy's phone number. The owner was out of town, so he asked them to lure the pig back to his pen, and once again, since this is Wisconsin, what else can you say besides, oh, sure.
By the way, let's recall for everybody that you are from Wisconsin, and therefore it's okay that you're poking fun this way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is how you act. You know your neighbors, and if somebody has to do something, even if you don't want to do it, you say, oh, sure, I can do that. No problem. They used cookies, marshmallows, and other sweets to help with this, along with the assistance of the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department, who called this a, quote, typical county call, end quote. It took 2.5 hours to travel the mile to get him home, but they finally managed it. Mulgard said, quote, he is a massive creature, but the owner says he's a gentle giant. We've been over there every day giving him a dozen donuts, end quote. Because why wouldn't you bring a dozen donuts to a pig every day? I don't know.
Yeah, right. I would assume after Kevin Bacon was dropped off at home, we might have stopped feeding him. But sure, dozen donuts. Yeah. What a pig.
Staying with animals, a Massachusetts library is allowing people to pay their fines with a photo of a cat in lieu of money. It is part of their March Meowness program. The Worcester Public Library said fines started piling up since the start of COVID, but now more than 400 accounts have been cleared up already. The program runs until the end of the month. They added, even if you don't have a cat in your life, you can still draw one, even if it's one of the big cats like a tiger or a lion. We'll be excited to see those. We will accept honorary cats as well, so you might show us a picture or drawing of a dog, raccoon, orca, capybara, or any other animal, end quote. So really, basically, bring in a picture of something, and they'll get rid of your fees that you owe on your books.
Man, the rigidity of the rules at the library has really gone downhill in the last 30 to 40 years.
I know. They used to reach out and be like, you owe us 10 cents. You better come in and bring it.
Now it's like, I don't care. You know, draw a picture of a cat if you like. That works. Yeah.
And to close out Weird Wednesday, I'm not going with a Guinness World Record. Instead, I'm going Lego. A rare Lego piece was just sold at auction for about $18,000. The small 14-karat gold Bionicle mask was donated to Goodwill at State College, Pennsylvania. The item was originally priced at $14.95 online. Chad Smith, the vice president of e-commerce and technology for Goodwill in North Central Pennsylvania, told People, it is People magazine, or is it just People? I don't know. Either way, he told them, you wouldn't think anything of it. It came in a little old-looking Lego box. The store didn't know it was worth anything until people started asking if they could buy it for $1,000, end quote. It ended up having 48 bids, with the largest one at $18,101. The second highest bid was $18,100. You know, that's some old school prices, right move there. The piece was one of 30 that was part of a giveaway in 2001 and weighs 9 ounces. If you think about it, the average price of gold right now per Monex is $2,035 per ounce. So I think the math works out there. The person may have actually come a couple hundred dollars ahead.
Yeah, wow. I would have never expected Lego to release a piece like that. But yeah, as you said, with the math there, you know what? In all likelihood, this will only appreciate in value. So perhaps, as bizarre as it sounds, not the worst investment in the world.
Yeah, and if you step on a Lego piece, are you less mad if it's a 14-karat gold one that's worth $18,000?
No, I'm more angry. Why is that piece on the freaking floor? Get it off the floor. Get it in a case somewhere or a safe. No, we're not leaving an $18,000 piece lying around.
Clean your rooms.
Yeah, well, if you let your kid play with that piece, that's on you.
Very true. I don't know. The kids get into some things they're not supposed to all the time.
Gotta get a safe.
Welcome to Codependence. What's up, guys? I'm Sierra Miller, and I want you to join me and my sister, Maya Allen, every week for the inside scoop into our sisterhood. You will be getting front row access to the good, the bad, the ugly, and the pretty. So come let your guard down with your fellow codependents as we laugh and, of course, cry our way through this crazy world. See you every Wednesday.
Taking a look at this day in history, on March 13th, 1877, Chester Greenwood patented the invention of the earmuffs. He actually created the earmuffs at the age of just 15 in 1873 while growing up in Maine. He reportedly made his first pair from farm wire and asked his grandmother to sew beaver fur onto the loops around his ears. He later made a metal band to connect the two earpieces. Now, technically, he didn't have the first earmuff. He actually patented the V-shaped swivel hinge that allows them to stay tight on their ear, which I think is a pretty useful part of the earmuff, in my opinion. I mean, you want it to stay on your ears to keep your ears warm. In 1877, after further testing of designs, Chester applied for and was granted U.S. patent number 188,292. And seeing a local need to keep the local townsfolk employed, he set up Greenwood's Ear Protector Factory in Farmington, and the town became known as the earmuff capital of the world. It actually went on to supply troops in World War I. Its best year, though, was in 1936, when it produced over 400,000 pairs. And like I always say with these stories, inventors just keep inventing. Greenwood actually ended up filing for over 100 patents in his lifetime. As for Farmington, they celebrate their hometown inventor every year in December for Chester Greenwood Day.
Oh, good on old Chester there. Yeah, that's quite an invention. But I will have to ask, do you know many people that prefer earmuffs to stocking caps?
I still wear earmuffs every now and then. I have ones that aren't your typical ones. They kind of go on the back of your head a little bit and they just wrap around to your ear. Hmm. That's usually what I use because then, you know, I don't have to mess with my beautiful hair.
Of course. I can't say that I've worn earmuffs since maybe elementary school, although I feel like a lot of, like my wife, for example, wears earmuffs, would prefer that because exactly what you just said, keeps the hair looking prettier as opposed to throwing a stocking cap on. But if I had to choose, yeah, I'm probably going with like a tight knit beanie.
I've seen people do both, put earmuffs on and the stocking cap over the earmuffs. They want to stay really warm.
I guess so. I've never had that problem with my ears. In fact, many times I'm just going to go out and leave them out there. It's all hanging out for the conditions. Maybe a baseball hat.
You're just free earing it, huh?
I'm just free earing it out there in the conditions.
You're a bold man.
That's how I show how tough I am.
Also, you live in Las Vegas, so it's not as much as a concern. You don't really get those sub-zero temperatures.
That is true. But when I return home to Wisconsin, I do the same thing. Although I complain a lot more about the cold.
That'll do it for another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Reach us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. He's Marcus Paff. I'm Reggie Rizzou. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.